Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, January 18th. I'm Ray Graff. In late August, a Mickey Mantle baseball card from 1952 sold for $12 million plus, almost double the previous record for a Honus Wagner card. A couple months ago, the first Star Trek comic book sold at an auction for a record-breaking $46,500. Why am I telling you this? Well, one, to kill 12 seconds of the billboard, and two, we have some experts in the studio today. Joining us, Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics and Al Itzkoff, singular, of Al's House of Sports Cards, both in Schenectady. If you want to talk comics and cards today, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. The fun begins after the news, which is also fun. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing comics and sports cards today with Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics and Al Itzkoff of Al's House of Sports Cards, both located in beautiful Schenectady, New York. Bill is the owner of Electric City Comics, founded in 1982. It's now one of the oldest comic shops in upstate New York. Bill was an advisor to the Overstreet Comic Book Price Guide update and has some experience on the other side. He was a comic book writer, so he knows the whole business. Al is the sole proprietor of Al's House of Sports Cards. Al has been an avid collector all his life. His shop carries complete card sets and sports memorabilia. I always love having these guys on the show. Always turns out to be a lot of fun. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org if you have a question. But the number again is 800-348-2551. Bill Townsend, how are you?
I'm doing good.
I appreciate you. You want to pull that mic a little closer to yourself. There you are.
Okay.
Oh, Zach, the engineer, is looking askance, but now we have done it properly. I always like dealing with you because you return my emails. Al, on the other hand, is very tough to get a hold of, and I was a little worried that you guys weren't going to show up today, but you did. How you doing there, Mr. Al?
I'm doing okay. I've been all right.
Yeah, the sports, there's been so much excitement going on in sports and local teams and regional teams. When a team like the Bills or the Giants or the Mets are doing well and in the postseason, do you see more walk-in customers?
Yes, yes.
And just
absolutely.
Saying, hey, listen, I got to get this card
or
that card.
Especially like the Bills, Giants.
Yeah.
That's huge. New England Patriots.
I wondered, you know, I thought about this the other day. When the New York teams do well, does it raise the water level for the whole league as far as collecting collectibles?
Yeah, people love local stuff. They love the teams, and they come in. Like Aaron Judge, he had a wonderful year, and his cards sold very well. His rookie cards.
What is an Aaron Judge rookie card going for these days?
Well, you can get a basic Aaron Judge rookie card, like if, say, affordable, like for $12 to $15, or you can also get one for $3,000-$5,000. It depends what kind you want.
Okay.
You know,
you want a refractor,
you want an autograph.
Refractors. Oh, I love that.
The signatures on them, they're beautiful cards. You want a finest, Bowman's, chrome. You know, they have so many different ones.
I want to put one I can put in the spokes of my bicycle tires and drive around.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
No, but I know kids who did.
Oh, yeah, of course they did.
Bill Townsend, I mentioned at the top of the show, a gold key, I think it was gold key, a Star Trek number one, sold for, I think, $46,000 or something like that a couple months ago. Does that shock you? Gold key was sort of one of the outliers.
Well, Gold Key was actually the successor company to Dell Comics.
I remember them.
And Dell published an incredible full line of comic books. Like we were saying, almost anything that was on TV had a comic, and it was generally a Dell comic.
Uh-huh.
And Star Trek, number one, a very nice copy, fetching $46,000. It surprises me a little, but not completely. However, how much money are you going to get for Star Trek VI?
A lot less.
A lot less.
But it had Spock on the cover. It was great. Picture of Spock.
Well, number one has Spock on the cover as well.
So I don't think it was number one, but if it's number one, I'm going to be very upset with myself. But I got rid of so many comics over the years. And
that's why the ones that are left are valuable.
And they gnaw at me. And the sports cards, the couple kids who are a little older than me, I'm sure fleeced me out of some of my best cards when I was young.
Years ago, there was a comic book story that was called My Mother Threw Them Out.
My mother threw
To hear my father tell about having all of the, like, Babe Ruth and all of the old...
Wow.
I found one Bill Dickey card years and years and years ago, and mistakenly, it was the last card he had. His grandmother threw them out. And I put it in a stack of cards with a rubber band around it and cut it in half.
Oh.
Yeah. There are a lot of things I regret, but let's not talk about my regrets. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. We go to Marie in Steventown. Marie, you're on.
Yes. Hi. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
In 1962, my husband got a baseball signed by about 15 of the New York Mets, including Duke Snyder. I can't really read any of the other names. It's very dirty and in need of restoration. Can it be restored? Can it be cleaned up? Is it worth doing so? Not that he's looking to sell it.
Ah,
yeah, I would. You would have to. I would have to see the baseball to look at it. But
how would you get grime off of baseball without ruining the signatures?
True, true. I mean, then in the old days they put lacquer on the baseballs, but that could be a valuable ball. I mean, if especially has got Gil Hodges' autograph on
Gil, Duke, and Frank Thomas. Sure. Frank Thomas just died the other day.
Oh, yeah.
He was an original
Met,
too.
He did.
Okay, there's a Larry, there's Duke Snyder, Al Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Al Jackson.
Well, that's great. To those of us Mets fans, those names are very familiar, but, of course, Duke was on the Dodgers and Gil was on the Dodgers and had made their bones there.
Of course.
Okay, so it would be worth bringing in your where in Schenectady?
Yes.
Okay, now, yes. We're not going to do direct solicitation of business because we value our FCC license, but I'll let you look it up. And Marie, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's cards today and comics. Al Itzkoff handles the sports cards, and Bill Townsend is our expert on comics today. And let's go to Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Jim, you're up.
Hey, Ray.
Hey, how are you?
Yes, I just wanted to throw a monkey wrench into the works here,
Splendid.
Perhaps.
All right.
As usual.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, I was wondering if your comics man, Mr. Townsend, does anyone have any kind of stocks of old Tarzan comic books?
Oh, my goodness. Tarzan has been in the comics going all the way back to the 30s.
The 50s. 40s.
No, back into the 30s.
30s even, huh?
Oh, yeah. And
I was reading them in the 50s.
Yeah. So there are hundreds of Tarzan comic books. And there have been some recently. There was a team-up comic between Tarzan and Red Sonja.
Who's Red Sonja?
Red Sonja is a character created by Robert Howard, the guy that created Conan.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
So
I remember Conan.
Yeah, so... And there was another one, Tarzan Meets Gru.
Who the heck is Gru?
Gru is Gru is basically a very dumb warrior.
A dumb warrior.
He's nobody's better at a sword with him, but boy, he is thick.
Okay, fair enough. Sounds compelling.
There was a scene where someone accused Gru of being slow of mind, and like five panels later, he goes, "What do you mean slow of mind?"
I see. But these, Jim, do you remember any of those?
No, I don't. I didn't get into those. I don't. They were either before me or after me. I was primarily involved in the 1950s.
So when they were in the 50s, they were Dell?
They were Dell comics, and they nearly always had photo covers of, say, for instance, Lex Barker.
Lex Barker.
Who played Tarzan on TV.
Okay, and is that what you have, Jim?
No, I don't have any, actually, no.
Ah.
But, yeah, well, my favorite Tarzan in the movies was Johnny Weissmuller.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's a little before the days of comics, though. It's like
was
the,
it?
Yeah.
It's like the
early
30s.
He was
the
old black and white movies.
Yeah, I remember
used to see at the local movie theater.
Showed them on Channel 10 every Sunday right before the Mets game. It was a little annoying. Hey, Jim, thank you very much for the call. The Tarzan comics went from Dell, and they went to Gold Key or Charlton?
They went to Gold Key.
They did. Yeah, I remember seeing them on the rack.
And then they went to D.C.
No kidding.
And DC kept the numbering from the Dell series. Tarzan got to close to issue 300, if I remember correctly.
Mm. We're talking comics and cards today. Al Itzkoff from Al's House of Sports Cards and Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics. Our number is 800-348-2551. And let's now go to Orange County. Josh, you're on. Go ahead.
Yes, hello, everyone. I have in the basement of my parents' house my older brother's comic collection, and it's about, I want to say 1,800 to 2,000, based on the number of, they're like nine big boxes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know nothing about comics. My question would be to Bill, what is the best route to maybe see if there's value in them? Do I just bring them to a store, try to get them sold bulk?
It's a matter of the amount of time you're willing to invest into it.
In research.
And research. Yeah. And research.
I see.
Lots of research. For instance, you can just show up at a store cold and you may get a good deal and you may not. One thing I always caution people against is if you want to sell them, if you don't want to keep them, if they have no value to you, sell the whole thing. Do not let someone cherry pick them. They'll pick out the good ones and they'll leave you with the ones that are hardest to sell.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Now, 1980, Josh, was the beginning of where your collections come from?
No, he said that there was 1800 to 2000.
Oh, I thought it was from 1980 to 2000. I thought that's where with the time frame.
No, you're both correct. You're both correct.
Okay.
Both those numbers are correct.
Now, was
that date range, you know.
Yeah. I mean, was 1980 the tail end of the Bronze Age of comics, or was this beyond?
Essentially, yes. And stuff from the late 80s and 90s is just so incredibly common. There's so much of it. So supply completely dwarfs demand. So that's a hard range of comics to sell.
But, again, if you do research, you might find that one or two that is really worth something.
Exactly. There's always valuable stuff, even in the doldrums.
Go ahead, Josh.
One just quick follow-up. I know that he was interested in, you know, more like indie comics as well, and like if you're familiar with Bone.
Okay.
The comic book Bone, some first issues of that sell for quite an amount I've seen. But I haven't seen them in the collection, unfortunately.
A lot of the indie comics from the 80s and 90s, it's really sad, but the stuff is sometimes hard to find, but when you find it, it's like $2 a comic.
Oh, okay. I've had some whiskeys like that. Josh, thanks a lot. We're going to take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. Comics and cards today. We're finally going to find out what a Radioactive Man number one is worth. We'll be back. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's Comics and Cards today. Al Itzkoff from Al's House of Sports Cards and Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics join us. And the number is 800-348-2551. We'll get back to the calls in a minute. Our email address is voxpop@wamc.org. A couple of emails here, and then we'll get back to the phones. This is from Mike in Saratoga, who says, I can empathize with you, Ray. I know I traded away a lot of rookie cards in pursuit of worthless Red Sox cards in the early 70s. My question is, are there any other kind of Red Sox cards? Anyway, I have a Sandy Koufax Topps rookie card, EX-5. Seems to have gone up quite a bit in value. Can I expect it to keep going? And that's from Mike in Saratoga.
The PSA 5 Koufax rookie, that's a highly desirable card. The twos sell for like $700, $800. The fives are probably, I don't know, I'm thinking close to $2,000 or more.
Yikes.
It depends on the centering on the card. It's a highly desirable card. He's one of the oldest living Hall of Famers, which is still alive, and super nice guy, too.
You met him?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, in Cooperstown.
Did he sign anything for you?
One item, that's it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, one item.
I hope you have that up at the shop.
I do. Well, not at the shop. It's in my office.
This is from Bob in Altamont. I have a number of collectible cards from the 30s and 40s I inherited from my father-in-law. They are as follows. Indian Gum Indian cards, Picture Puzzle Bubblegum Wild West series, and Hassan the Oriental Smoke Indian Life in the 60s, as well as several other series. Most of them are complete or nearly so, but in used condition. My question is it worth having them evaluated? I mean, they're not sports cards, so it's really not in your wheelhouse.
It's not in my wheelhouse, but still, I know a little bit about them. They were made in the 30s. They're cool cards. They're pictures of, like, the Indians and the Cowboys.
Yeah.
They're anywhere, like, and depends on the condition. You know, most of them go between $5 to $10, unless you have some super high-grade cards that go maybe $20, $30, $40.
Ah, all right. Now, this next one is from Christian. And, Al, I caution you. The answer that you should not say is, oh, yeah, come to my shop, all right? So here's the question.
Okay.
This is from Christian. Where can a guy get a pack of baseball cards? Whenever I go to any nameless big box stores, I check to see if they have packs of cards. They never do. Seems like an impossible task to find a simple pack of baseball cards. I heard that the real card pros, unlike myself, line up on the days when they restock the cards and buy them all. I just want a pack of cards. That's from Christian.
You should be able to find them by now because they've all raised their prices on most of the products. You can go to a drugstore, I think.
Listen, I agree with Christian. Now, you know me. I'm not a collector anymore, but I buy 10 packs a season or something. I'll go in. And I usually go to these big stores and when I'm shopping or whatever, and they're all out every time.
It's starting to get easier. Well, easier. It used to be really tough. You couldn't find anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't even find hockey cards.
Really?
Now you can actually go to a shop and the big box store and find hockey cards.
I got a Brad Park card. You want that?
Brad Park card.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Old
All right,
school.
Let's go back to our calls. 800-348-2551. Chad is in East Hampton. Chad, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Good. I'm just wondering what the value would be of the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame Enshrinement Weekend. This is a piece. It's a sheet of paper with the Basketball Hall of Fame logo and also a picture of all the inductees in black and white in the left-hand corner. The autographs are Ralph Miller, George Frazier, and it goes Ice, number 44, Eddie Bettman, Gail Goodrich, John Kudla, Gino Auriemma, Ray Myers, Nancy Lieberman, David Thompson, Jennifer Rosati, and George Landry.
That's a pretty unique piece during the inductions. They all have different pricing on them. It's mostly like you really should just check the market and see what that kind of stuff goes for. You can try completed listings on eBay or go to a local show. But those are unique items. They're not like a single sign basketball, you know. This is a induction ceremony kind of piece. In baseball, like if that was a baseball item, it probably would be like a $200-$300 item. But I don't know the basketball that well. But it's probably up there, and I would get that authenticated, too, if I were you.
Where would I go to get it authenticated?
I would send out for JSA or PSA. Those services are fine.
And they're trustworthy. You can send them and expect to get your card, the same card, back?
Yes, and the same product back. Or you can go to a show and get it done in person, too.
Yeah.
You can do that, too.
Oh, okay. The other thing, is it worthwhile getting sports cards graded? For PSA.
It depends what they are. Obviously, if you have something vintage and older or a key rookie card, you would want to get that graded to preserve the card and also to add value to it if it comes back a higher grade.
Sure. And the last thing, I don't know what the value is, but I have Basketball Hall of Fame cards, but they're metal. And that doesn't have a card company on the card at all. I don't know if the Hall of Fame just put these out, but they're it says Collector's Series Basketball Hall of Fame, Springfield, Mass., but they're metal cards. Have you ever heard of them? Or
I would have to take a look at
metal them. Cards.
Metal cards.
How convenient.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead, Chad. You can finish it up here. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. No, that was my last question. Well, could I text them to you?
Why don't you email the show, and we'll go that way. We'll see what's going
on.
All right?
That's fine. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. 800-348-2551 is our number. Comics and Cards today, Al Itzkoff of Al's House of Sports Cards, Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics, and now we go to New Paltz. Lee, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
Am I on?
Yes.
Well, yeah, hi. This is Lee from New Paltz.
Yes.
My wife and I have a collection of Golden Age comics, about 100. They're well-preserved, and they're most of them are in good to very good condition. Amongst them, for example, we have the number one Donald Duck from 1939. We would like to get some kind of assessment. We know that they've gone down in value because of the superhero craze. We're still interested in getting some sense of what it's worth. Can you give me an idea of, for instance, what that Donald Duck number one is worth?
Well, the question is, which Donald Duck number one?
Wow, from 1939.
From 1939. The first thing I want to say is you say they're in good to very good condition.
You know,
but
can you speak up a little, please?
Yeah, come a little closer to the mic, Bill. There we go.
Come a little bit closer.
Right. Let's not sing, though. Okay.
Okay.
yeah, that's better.
You say they're in good to very good condition, but in terms of grading, and this is actually true of cards, too, good to very good is the lowest grade. If something's in good condition, it's basically holding together, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Higher grade is fine and very fine.
But now, Lee, when you say good to very good, are you saying just based on your look, these look pretty nice, or do you have some background in the grading of them?
No, we don't have the formal background. When I say good to very good, meaning that they're very much intact, covers are intact,
glossy.
They're readable. They're not brittle. And
no white.
No white paper, obviously, at that age. But they're really nice. They're, what I would consider very good, but obviously I'm not talking technically.
Yeah.
Okay. But like I say...
And we do have...
Go ahead, Lee.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, the first appearance of Donald Duck, I think, was in Mickey Mouse Magazine, which was kind of the precursor to all the Disney comics.
Right, but this is Donald Duck 1. Like, there's a Superman 1, but he was in Action Comics
yes,
first.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
These are Dell.
It depends very much on the grade. A very beat-up one would be maybe a couple hundred dollars. A nicer one would be a couple of $1,000.
Nice.
So, it's a nicer one. It's very much dependent on grade.
Wow.
Because the price and gap from a lower grade thing to a higher grade thing, as time has gone on, it's got bigger and bigger.
But if it's glossy and stuff, maybe, Lee, you ought to book that trip to Aruba. You know what I mean?
If it's a high-end, best copy in existence, it could be like $10,000.
No.
$15,000.
Right. What else do you have, Lee?
What else do we have?
Walt Disney's Comics and Stories from Volume 1 till the mid-60s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Among others, we also have some Hulus. We have most of our stuff is Disney animal comics from around the 40s on through.
40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah, 40s through 60s.
Funny animal and cartoon books, which were very popular in the 50s and 60s, are a lot less so now.
Interesting.
Yes, we've discovered
that. Yeah, as you have discovered. Walt Disney Comics and Stories, the numbering is baroque, to say the least.
Baroque or broke?
Maybe a little of both.
Oh, nice.
A lot of times this is volume 4, issue 3, but it's really issue 63.
So, I hate that.
And Dell was famous for not putting the numbers on the covers. So you had
They're
to
on the first page.
Now,
yeah,
do
the first
they have
page
the numbers
on
the covers?
No.
Well, no, they're on the first page.
Yeah, a lot of them do, but they all have on the first page, the bottom.
The indica, yes, the indica. That's what you have to check, the indica.
All right. Well, listen, we'll have to cut this one short here, but thank you so much for the call, both of you, Lee and a significant other, I presume. 800-348-2551 is the number. Now we go to Durham. Glenn, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I have a Stan Usual card. I think it's 1963. It's the only card I have left. And I believe it was his last year he played. I don't think it has any much of a value, but I'm just curious.
It's 63 tops. Those are really nice cards. It's probably like a $75 to $100 card. It depends on the condition.
Stan the man. How many more years did he play?
He played in the 40s. I mean, he played a long time.
Last year.
Yeah, it's his last year. Don't they have like a first year? Don't the last year also have some extra value?
Yeah, but most people want Stan the man from like the 1950s.
Yeah.
You know, they want the 53 Bowman or, you know.
Right.
They want a 50, you know.
I would hold that one for dear life. And my father was a Dodgers fan, and he made their life miserable.
Yeah. The only card I have left out of all the cards I had.
Yeah.
My mother threw out all my Spider-Man comic books, 1-100.
That's awful.
This is all that's left.
That hurts, Glenn. It hurts me inside. Thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. This email from regular correspondent Mark. For anyone who loves comics and comic-related items, can you talk about the popularity of Comic-Con festivals? How has Comic-Con affected the industry?
Well, I'll tell you. One of the reasons why we had a big boom in back issue sales in the mid-pandemic year is that all of the conventions were canceled. So a lot of people...
Oh, so it was a inverse of what we thought would happen.
Yes, exactly.
Interesting.
Exactly. So a lot of people who would otherwise have spent the time and money visiting conventions said, okay, I'm going to take a tour of upstate New York, and I'm going to visit all the comic stores there instead of spending the money flying to the West Coast and going to San Diego Comic-Con.
Huh. Did you ever go to the San Diego thing?
I've only been there once, but it was very memorable. It was an unbelievable media spectacular.
Yeah, I've seen some footage of that, and it's a little odd.
And
I'm going to be honest with you.
Cosplay
it's
is
like cosplay
super big.
Galore.
Yeah.
Cosplay is super big at these conventions.
Do you have people showing up in Howard the Duck costumes and, and such?
No, I'm sure they're showing up for Harley Quinn.
Remember Howard the Duck?
Oh, no. They mainly show up as, like, hot Spider-Man villains and stuff like that.
All right. Well, there we go. Let's go back to our phone lines. We'll grab one or two more here before the next break. To Northampton. Michael, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead.
Basic question. In my inventory, I have a lot of cards. They're all in shoeboxes from like the middle, late 60s through the 70s. And then I've got boxes of complete sets from about the middle 80s through about 2000. I've got some good rookie cards from the 60s and 70s. But I'm wondering, does it make sense to try to sell these piecemeal or to try to sell? I'd rather just sell them off as a lot. And I wonder, you already kind of answered the question about grading. If you get something really good, you want to get it graded.
Yes.
But would I lose a lot if I just tried to sell the whole bunch? I'll take the call offline.
Thanks,
Thank you,
Michael. Appreciate it. Well, we covered this a little bit, but go ahead, Al.
Yeah, in a situation like that, I would consider going through the cards, cherry-picking something that you think is going to grade high and get that graded and submit it. But if the cards are all consistent, if they're like all VG or X, unless you have something significant, it's not worth spending your time and effort of pursuing grading and waiting forever. You would just try to sell the whole collection as a one unit.
Yeah.
But if you see something significant, like you see, a Tom Seaver rookie, obviously you want to pull that out. It's a 67 tops, a desirable high number. You would get that graded. Even if it's a low grade, it's still worth getting graded.
All right. This email from Judith. Judy from Palmer. Just want to say not all mothers and grandmothers threw out all the toys. I have all my son's comics and any baseball cards he collected. Plus, I kept most of his toys. I think I like them more than he does. Anyway, Judy writes,
is my idol.
See?
She's my hero.
There's one person who did the right thing.
Yes.
There is a Bo Jackson card in there, possibly a rookie. Didn't he play two sports? Is Bo Jackson collectible? And that's from Judy.
Yes, Bo Jackson is very collectible, but they've also made a ton of them. They're especially like 87 tops, heavily mass-produced. Very popular card, but it's not worth a ton of money unless you have like a Tiffany or you have something like extremely rare of the rookie card.
All right, let's take a break here. Al Itzkoff of Al's House of Sports Cards and Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics join us. We'll get back to more of your calls and emails in a moment. There seems to be some controversy here in Studio
A.
We're right on the show here and everything. It's fine, Al. It's okay. We're arguing about Donald Duck comics and that there was no number one in 1939.
Basically, yeah. The series of Donald Duck from Dell started with issue 26.
Aha.
Wow.
But basically, Dell had this series called Four Color that basically came out every week.
Yeah.
And it could be anything. It could be Donald Duck. It could be a movie comic. It could be a TV comic.
Yeah.
The very first Donald Duck was Four Color Number 4.
Aha.
Wow.
That was from 1939. And even in beat-up shape, it's worth a couple of thousand dollars.
Wow.
So
wow.
A nice glossy one, we could be talking $10,000, $15,000.
Maybe they have that. Wow.
Okay, well, fair enough. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Comics and Cards Today with Bill Townsend and Al Itzkoff. We go to New Paltz. And David, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Great show.
Thanks.
This Friday, I'm going to be 81. When I was 19, I was working in an inking studio for comics, and I my job was to clean up. And there was a lot of stuff that original inkings I saved. That I saved the ones that were signed. They were mostly Doctor Strange. There were a lot of Al Caps and stuff like that. Is there any value to that?
Now, you're talking about original art here, correct?
Yeah.
Now,
yes.
I'm kind of confused because Doctor Strange and Al Cap, they'd be from two different sources because one is a newspaper strip and the other is a comic book. So basically,
inkings were really done by couple of studios. They were subcontracted out.
Original art these days goes for a lot more than it used to. The auction houses that are putting up original art pages, it's like I see posts online of some artists saying, "Oh, 20 years ago I sold this to a fan for $50," and they're selling it on on Heritage Auctions for $50,000.
Yeah.
So
why would you broadcast the fact that you did that?
Yeah, it's like, well, I mean,
so it's worth something.
Oh, it depends on what it is.
Doctor Strange, though, it's Doctor Strange.
But for instance, is it a page that features Doctor Strange prominently, or is it just a bunch of talking heads explaining plot points?
Action, a lot of action.
A lot of action. See, that's the good stuff. That's the good stuff. If it's a splash page,
and they're all signed.
Wow!
So you actually have a little Abner strip signed by Al Cap.
A lot of them.
Wow. Okay. Yes, those are definitely things that have some value. I'm not
Little Abner, Dog Patch, that series.
Yeah.
Cha-ching, baby.
Yes, yes. I would definitely say so. But because each original art piece is unique, it's hard to say, "Oh, this is worth $1,500. This is worth $1,000."
Individually, you have to look at them and
you have to look at them individually. What I would recommend doing is look up on eBay. Once again, like Al said, finished auctions.
Completed listings. Not what people want, because people want the world for their stuff.
And see if you see similar things. those will give you an idea what those things are worth. But from what I understand, prices for original art are all over the place.
Wow. Hey, David, wow. Before you go, man, happy birthday.
Oh, yeah, happy birthday.
Oh, yeah, happy birthday.
Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Alitskov, Bill Townsend, it's Comics and Cards today. And to Greenfield, Massachusetts, we go. It's a Cliff. You're on.
Yeah. I actually have a original artwork from Apartment 3G, I believe, by Alex Kotsky. It's a comic strip. It's obviously larger than you would see in a newspaper. It's signed, and then I also have the letter. It was sent to somebody, and I found it at a tag sale. And the letter basically says, you know, this is original artwork by me, and he left his address back from 1996. And I believe, unfortunately, Alex passed away that year, 3 months later. Oh. So I just don't know if I should keep it or what should I do with it.
Original art from the 90s, I don't know if it goes for that much, especially newspaper art. It depends on how valuable it is to you, I would say.
That's a very tactful way of saying it's not maybe worth all that much.
Well, no. I mean, making the effort to find out what it might sell for, once again, you could look him up on eBay and see if there's any other original pieces of his. And if you say, oh, they're selling for $20, I might as well keep it. Mm-hmm. Or if you find out, oh, they're going for $1,500, $2,000, I might try to sell it.
Yeah.
So, but once again, original art used to be so common. I mean, I would go to conventions and there'd be artists there with stacks of their original pieces, and they'd be selling them for $5 a piece.
Yeah.
So that has changed a bit. A lot of this, I mean, like I say, every piece is unique. You're the only person that has that strip in the whole world.
Yeah, that's true.
So, once again.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Cliff.
Is Heritage a place that does, they give you evaluations, but they only want anything to do with it if it's $5,000 or more? Is that Heritage? Is that the same place?
You know, I need to know more about auction houses. That's one of my resolutions for 2023, because I have some original art myself.
Oh, do you?
That I would like to sell. Okay. And it's like, how does one go about doing that?
So maybe the next time you guys are on, you'll have
I will have more knowledge.
A little
about
homework
this.
There.
Heritage is the very high end stuff. Heritage is the place that sold the Action Comics number one for $3.6 million. Mm. They might not be so down with selling something that is going to get $100.
Yeah, it's a good point. Let's go to Fly Creek. And is it Haya or Haya? Either way, Haya.
Hi, it's Claire.
Oh, Claire? There's no way that the letters on my screen say Claire. All right, go ahead, Claire. You're awesome.
Okay. Well, what I have is a piece of Ebbets Field. My husband...
Cool.
Yeah, it's a piece of Ebbets Field. My husband sent for it for, I think it was 25 cents. I guess it was when they were taking part of Ebbets Field down. Stenciled on it is Ebbets Field, 1913-1957. What it is it's a piece of a chair. You know how the bleachers had the chairs with the little wooden slats?
Yeah.
So I guess they cut them up and sold them.
Smart.
And I'm wondering if it's worth anything.
All right. Can you turn your radio down just a wee bit there, Claire?
1 second.
Thanks. Meanwhile.
Yeah, that's a memorabilia piece. They've done that a lot for the Yankee Stadium, too, and they've done that to the Babe Ruth bat. I mean, they've chopped up Babe Ruth's bat to a million pieces, where you can buy now for like $400, which is like...
Oh, that's sad.
It's sad. I mean, they'll do anything. It's a good marketing tool. There's people that collect stuff like that. It's neat. Probably anywhere between $150 to $250.
That is such a cool piece,
it's
though,
a cool
Claire.
Piece.
Gosh, that's great.
I think.
It is. It really is. It is a nice memory of him. Okay.
Thanks a
lot. 150? 100, 150?
Something like that.
Something like that, maybe a little bit more. It depends what it looks like.
Okay. Thanks.
I very much appreciate your input. That is a very nice thing to know.
Well, yep. Thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. The guys in the control room are laughing, and I'd love to know what they're laughing about. But I'll find out after the show, because then I'll be laughing too. But it was obviously very funny. Let's go to Williamstown. Stuart, what do you got?
I have Eastman and Laird's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, number 2, 1984, and it's autographed by Eastman and Laird. You guys there?
The problem with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is a lot of the early issues were reprinted many times.
Many times.
And it's hard to tell what printing you have.
How do you tell?
Now, is it, now, okay, is it bigger than an ordinary comic?
It's a same size.
It's the same size.
As the other two that I want to ask you about, which are G.I. Joe and Wolverine.
Okay, if it's the same size as those two comics, it is definitely a later printing.
It's a later printing. Because the big one was early?
The big ones were early, because basically it was just a fly-by-night organization. They only printed 2,000 copies of their first issue.
Mm. Okay. So,
but you can also open up the splash page and find out. Wouldn't it have it right there?
You know what? There are some technical issues that you have to look at. There's some special things. I recently looked at a collection that had a bunch of the early ones, and I recall there were some certain things like, oh, if you see an ad for such and such, this is definitely not a first printing.
Uh-huh.
But the first printing has got their oversized comics, correct?
They're oversized comics. Yeah. They're bigger than Golden Age.
Oh, all right, wow. Stuart, you wanted to ask about Wolverine and somebody else?
I don't see any ads, by the way. Then there was a Wolverine number 1, 1982.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And G.I. Joe number 1, 1982.
Okay.
Volume 1, number 1, 1982.
Those are both books of interest. Wolverine number 1 has a red cover, and it's basically the first issue of his miniseries, and it's basically his first solo book ever. A nice copy is going.
A picture of Wolverine on the front,
and he's holding up his hand with his claws popped. Basically, a nice copy will fetch you a couple $100.
Nice.
Very nice.
G.I. Joe is actually in the same boat. G.I. Joe was hugely popular back in the 80s. It was probably the best-selling comic in the world circa 1988.
Really? I mean, the G.I. Joe heyday of the figurines was in the 60s, right?
No. The 6-inch G.I. Joe figures had their own cartoon show in the 80s.
Yep.
And basically, the cartoon show was a half-hour commercial for selling the G.I. Joe action figures and the comics.
Aha.
Yes.
So
that's worth something as well.
That's worth something as well. I would say that a nice G.I. Joe number 1 would be in the $150, $200 range.
Nice.
Yeah, okay. Nice.
Well, good luck with that, Stuart.
For a long time, number 2 was the issue everyone was looking for.
Oh, really? Why?
Simply because the orders dropped off with issue 2 because nobody knew this was going to be a hit. Back in the early 80s, Marvel was putting out a lot of toy comics, and most of them were utter junk.
I believe it.
And everyone just thought, oh, look, another toy comic. So they didn't order it heavily. And they were sorry later.
By the way, we got an email from David here, and I showed you the pictures. Looks like he had, my computer. Okay, here we go. Thor 231 and Fantastic Four Fighting the Hulk 166.
Okay, those two books. Thor 251 is a pretty common book. $10 for something that old.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four is one of the Hulk versus Thing battles.
Yeah. Oh, great. I used to love those.
And nearly always the Hulk would beat the Thing. And in this particular one, I remember that somehow their brains got switched.
Ah.
So the Hulk's brain was in the Thing, and the Thing's brain was in the Hulk. And the Thing with the Hulk's brain beat the pie out of the Hulk with the Thing's brain in him. That would be like a $25, $30 book.
Okay. Wow. Al, are you just excited that there was no brain switching in the sports card world?
Yeah, thank God they didn't brain switch.
That's awesome. All right, let's go back to the phones and to Williamstown again. This is Barbara. Barbara, you're on.
Hi.
It's very loud behind you, Barbara. Are you in a babbling brook by any chance? Not that well.
No.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Sort of, yes.
Okay, one question to the comic book person. Tell me about how the early Wonder Woman books, comic books do. The early ones, the original ones.
Oh, the early ones? Well, those are Golden Age books, and the early appearances of Wonder Woman, very expensive, very hard to find. I wouldn't say it's quite at the level of the early Batman and Superman appearances.
But it's close.
But it's immediately underneath it.
Neato. Yeah. Okay.
I'm certain that a copy of Sensation Comics number one, which is the first Wonder Woman, has gone for more than $1 million.
Wow. Barbara, do you have one of those?
No, I just have all of Jill Lepore's book and a collection of the comics. My second question is to the baseball card person.
Yeah.
A very dear friend of mine's brother was murdered over his baseball card collection.
Sorry to hear that.
I'm curious to know, what are the dangers of having valuable cards?
That's a hard one for Al to answer. But
that's a hard question.
That's a sad story, Barbara,
that really
for sure.
Is.
You know,
it'd be like having anything valuable.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's we're
keep
sorry
it in
to
a
hear
safety
that.
Deposit box.
Yeah, Barbara, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And let's see, we got a few minutes left with the fellas. We'll go to Bob in Schenectady. Bob, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, can you hear me good? I'm not sure I'm in a good sound.
No, you're okay. Go.
Okay. So I have a program and a bet ticket that I didn't cash from the 1973 Belmont Stakes that Secretariat won the Triple Crown, which is the 50th anniversary coming up this year. I don't know if you guys have any sense of what the value is, and I also have a question as to whether or not the ticket, I've a couple of times I've taken it out and I forgot to put it away again. And it's the paper is getting really faded. I would like to know what I should do with those.
Okay.
You could preserve it by buying a ticket holder for it. And your program, you can get a bag and board and put the program right in it. And you can also get a top loader that's thick enough to put the stuff in and try not to handle it as much. That's all.
Yeah. Where would you get something like that?
Yeah, well, most sports cards and memorabilia places will have them, so you could seek out one of those for sure. There's one in Schenectady.
If you guys have it, I'll come into. Should I come into the?
Well, we don't want to say that. It's a public radio thing, and then I'll get fired. But I think you know. All right, Bob. Thanks a lot for the call. And caramba, right, Jack in Williamstown, you're on. Hello there, Jack.
Hello, are you talking to me?
If you're Jack and you're Williamstown, yes, man, yes.
Yes, that's me. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 1963 program.
Yeah.
From the Kansas City Athletics playing the New York Yankees. It says 15 cents on the front of it. But on the inside, there's autographs from Ralph Terry, Elston Howard, and Yogi Berra.
Cool.
Very cool. Are they signed by any chance?
Autographs.
Like real autographs or facsimile?
Well, yes.
I mean, that's a good point. Are they printed?
They did a lot of facsimile stuff back then. You can go to souvenir shops then.
And get printed.
And get that. People bring that in all the time.
My relatives had, you open the thing and there's a place where you have score, you know, a box score.
Yeah.
And the players wrote their names across the grid three different angles.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
You can tell the handwriting is, you know, would be identifiable.
All right, we only got about 15 seconds here, Jack. But yeah, what do you think, Al?
That's something that's worth probably a few $100. I mean, you would have to get that authenticated, obviously. Neither get a JSA, PSA letter.
How would I do that?
You would have to go to a show and submit it. That's the best thing to do, unless you can send it through the mail, too.
Okay.
But best thing to do is go to a card show.
All right, Jack, we'll have to leave it there, but thank you very much for the call. Hey, Bill Townsend, nicely done today. Thank you for being here.
I'm glad to be here. Glad to help inform people.
And by the way, how do people find Electric City Comics on the web?
Well, we have our own website, www.electriccitycomics.com, but we're also mainly on Facebook.
Okay. Yes. And you look for Electric City Comics on Facebook. Al Itzkoff, how do we find Al's House of Sports Cards? Don't try calling Al that often because he never returns the calls.
No, I will return your call.
Okay, yeah. If it's anybody but me, he'll return the calls.
I will return your call. Facebook. Just go to Facebook, Al's House of Sports Cards, and find collectibles.
Hey, guys. Thank you both for being here. A lot of fun. Support comes from Floor Coverings International. National, locally owned, operated franchise serving the WAMC listening area with mobile showroom that brings flooring to the customer. Floorcoveringsinternational.com for estimates. And Friends of Chamber Music, presenting the Danish String Quartet, January 28th at 3 in Page Hall, University of Albany downtown campus. Ticket information at friendsofchambermusic.org. Now I'm thinking about a nice, delicious Danish, but that isn't going to happen. All right, thanks again to Bill Townsend and Al Itzkoff for being here today. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Norman Konarkiewicz and Jordan Yuxall screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we talk travel with Gene Gagnon. We'll see you, too.